This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yeishu Heap. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Well, in a year where we've seen so many dramatic changes in Italy, in particular regarding migrants and a tougher approach from the government, it's interesting that this organisation, Refugees Welcome, has been working behind the scenes really to host individual migrants and refugees, pairing them up with host families.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. We'll have full details on the story coming up.
Also, South Africa's national power provider Eskom is desperately trying to keep the country's lights on over the Christmas and New Year period. And in Sudan, doctors began a strike today, adding more pressure for President Omar al-Bashir to hand over power.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. South Africa's national power provider, Eskom, is desperately trying to keep the country's lights on over Christmas and New Year period. Eskom has nearly $30 billion in debt and is running out of coal if it needs to generate electricity. The company's new bosses blame the crisis on its previous leaders, who were appointed by former President Jacob Zuma. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
It's a few days before Christmas, and in Tandi Mabile's butchery in Tembisa, east of Johannesburg, the smell of fresh meat hangs in the air. Mabile's assistants cleave and mince meat, their white aprons flecked with blood. The store is packed with people buying for the holidays. Mabile's happy with the custom, but also anxious.
If there are long power cuts, my meat will go rotten. I've already lost a lot of money because I sometimes had no electricity leading into Christmas, so I couldn't order more meat from my suppliers.
Economist Azar Jamin says Eskom's generation failure harms the entire South African economy.
But it's your smaller businesses who find it too costly to purchase generators. They're the ones who are suffering. Also, many of your service industries, things like restaurants and...
Mining and energy consultant Ted Blom says several factors have caused Eskom to implode. In 2007, he and other experts advised the regulator to commission new coal mines or face acute shortages. The warning was ignored. As a result, he says, Eskom is accepting any coal it can get, even poor quality coal, which can damage boilers. Jamin says Eskom and the state's failure to plan created the crisis.
The old coal-fired power stations that were built in the 70s and 80s are falling apart. They've broken down one after another.
State contractors have almost completed building two mega power stations. Experts say these facilities should already be producing enough electricity to avert blackouts. But, says Public Enterprises Minister Pravin Gordhan, they're not.
What we're discovering as a result of an investigation that has been started by Eskom is that the original equipment manufacturers, the people who are putting the boilers in and the grinders in and all the various equipment that needs to be put in, are doing a substandard job. There'll be consequences for them. Those are serious issues. These are international players.
Gordhan is the man President Cyril Ramaphosa chose to fix the mess. He attributes the electricity interruptions largely to shoddy maintenance. Jamin argues that Eskom doesn't have the technical skills on hand to do high-quality maintenance. Gordhan acknowledges that Eskom has been employing the wrong people in top positions and says his department will recruit highly qualified specialists as soon as possible. Jamin says graft and mismanagement have a big role in the power system's financial problems, But Eskom's also short of funds because the middle class is no longer willing to pay for its expensive yet unreliable electricity and is investing in alternative energy sources.
At the same time, it's got a debt of 419 billion rand. The interest payable on the debt will amount to 250 billion over the next 3 years. They can't generate enough revenue and cash to pay the interest.
Despite all the problems, Eskom's new board says the power cuts will end within 3 months. Blom is skeptical.
I think they're talking nonsense, but by the same token, I understand that they're trying to underplay the problem. Do you know how long it takes to open up a new coal mine?
I do not.
If you're lucky, 5 years.
He says Eskom needs to open 20 new mines to deliver 100 million tons of coal a year. Given this, he predicts that coal shortages will mean the blackouts will continue for the next decade. That, says Jamin, will be disastrous for South Africa.
Any hopes of economic growth picking up beyond 1 or 2% in the next few years is pie in the sky then. On the contrary, we could end up in recessionary conditions.
Blom says there's a way to ease the crisis.
We export about 72 million tons of coal a year. The government can declare a national disaster and access export coal.
But he adds that this would have to be a very short-term option because coal makes up as much as 20% of the country's export revenue, money it cannot afford to lose. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
A new report by the advocacy and aid group Refugees Welcome International shows that their program to place migrants and refugees with host families is having a positive effect on the perception of migrants and on Italy as well. Refugees Welcome promotes the idea that refugees should not be stigmatized and excluded from society by being placed in camps. Instead, they seek volunteer families to place them with so they can live in a welcome environment. Reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with me about how the group works behind the scenes to make migrants and refugees feel more welcome in Italy.
Well, in a year where we've seen so many dramatic changes in Italy in particular regarding migrants and a tougher approach from the government, it's interesting that this organisation, Refugees Welcome, has been working behind the scenes really to host individual migrants and refugees, pairing them up with host families with the intention of promoting inclusion, reinforcing social cohesion and fighting prejudice and racial stereotypes. So this organisation between 2016 and 2018 has basically organised 120 hostings for individuals around the country, mostly being hosted with families, couples with children, some being hosted with individuals. And this is a really exciting breakthrough, I think, for many migrants and refugees who struggle when they arrive in Italy. They spend a lot of time in migrant welcome centres without actually having that support of the community.
And what has been the reaction to other people there who are seeing these positive things being revealed?
Well, it's interesting to see that many of these migrants are becoming settled in the community, being welcomed by families, individuals and couples. Many of them come from the Gambia, Mali, Nigeria and other African countries. And we've heard amazing stories of how they've been welcomed. Carolina and her husband Benedetto and their 3 children are hosting Saidu. He's 23 years old. He came to Italy from Burkina Faso and he talks about how afraid he was at the beginning and how happy he is now. Ali is a 19-year-old from Mali. He left home when he was only 14. He travelled through Algeria and Libya, had awful experiences in Libya in a detention centre and spent his early days in Italy in a migrant welcome centre. He's now being hosted by Esther, a single woman, and is very happy there. So according to this report, around 1,200 Italian families and more than 3,000 refugees have applied to be part of this system and gradually they're trying to match the migrants and refugees up with individual families so that they can be happier and better settled in Italy and part of the community. And as we've seen, this year has gravitated to the right, supporting the hardline policies of this government that was elected this year. So a positive from this organisation that feels very strongly about making a difference to migrants and refugees in Italy.
How long do the migrants and refugees stay with the host families?
Well, generally they stay on average around 7 months. Many of them have had time already in migrant welcome centres, so they spend several months with the families and then perhaps move on and find their own way. The average age is between 20 and 30 years old. So we're talking about young adults here who are being welcomed by these families and are looking to study and find jobs in the community as well. But the average length of time is around 9 months.
How do they get volunteers to participate?
Well, it's interesting. This organization depends on around 200 volunteers. They're scattered in small groups across 18 cities and 11 regions across Italy, and they help to process requests, help families and refugees meet each other and try and find suitable matches between the two. Doesn't always work out. Sometimes a migrant or a refugee has to be relocated if it doesn't quite work out. But in general, the organisation says this has been a very successful operation and is really helping to create positive change in Italy. This is a country where we've seen more than 600,000 migrants and refugees arrive in Italy, mostly crossing the Mediterranean between 2014 and 2017. So we've seen a lot of strain put on the country's reception system. And this is an alternative. This is a way of making people feel more welcome and giving them that personal experience, that sense of a true family. And from what the families are saying, it's been a very positive experience to them as well.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome.
Doctors in Sudan began a strike today, adding more pressure for President Omar al-Bashir to hand over power. The strike follows a series of protests that the opposition says have killed 22 people since last Wednesday, when offices of Bashir's ruling National Congress Party were set on fire in eastern Sudan. The government says the toll is lower. The protests have spread since then across the country. Police fired tear gas yesterday at hundreds of soccer fans who began protesting against the government after leaving a match in the capital, Khartoum. That followed the reports that 14 leaders of an opposition coalition were arrested as they left a meeting Saturday. The protests began after bread and fuel prices jumped amid inflation of nearly 70%. The value of the currency has plunged. Bashir took power in a 1989 coup. Since then, Sudan has suffered from U.S. sanctions and the secession of oil-rich South Sudan.
Ugandan traders are counting profits from printing election materials for candidates in the DRC ahead of that country's general election now scheduled for Sunday. Most towns in eastern DRC do not have the machinery to printing banners, flyers, and T-shirts, forcing candidates to turn to neighboring Uganda for help. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
For close to 2 months, Ugandan traders in the printing industry have been spending sleepless nights in order to meet the high demand for campaign materials for Democratic Republic of Congo candidates for presidential and all other elective posts. Ronnie Oboya is a graphics designer in Kampala. He says he has printed posters for about 300 DRC candidates, including one presidential candidate whom he refused to name.
They were doing like posters, flyers, different sizes, non-stop, even almost transnight. So we stopped Ugandan work and we did Congolese work. Their cash is quick cash. It's not like a Ugandan who will come here and say like, I have this work, do it, I'm coming back with that money. They present cash, ready cash.
According to Oboya, the traders abandoned printing orders from Ugandans and concentrated on the Congolese work, which they say fetched some good cash.
daily consumption was so bulk. It even made us to close Ugandan work. We had to stop it, postponing until later in the night. Because, of course, the Congolese want to do the production during the evening. They just take on the bus.
Julius Katende, another Ugandan trader, admits that the Congo election has been a major boost to their printing business, as they made profits like never before.
For almost a month, people have made money, starting from the supply. I have friends that have changed their life totally through the Congo election campaign.
The DRC elections, which had been scheduled for today, 23rd December, will now be held on 30th December. The DRC nationals will be voting the next president to replace Joseph Kabila, who has held the office for 2 terms. Alongside the presidential elections, we'll also be voting for parliamentary and local council candidates. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
The Central African Economic and Monetary Community, CEMAC, says its coins, estimated at millions of dollars, have been illegally exported to China, where they are used to make jewelry. CEMAC says the situation is very serious and that urgent measures must be taken by all the 6 member states to protect the currency. As Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé, the CEMAC central bank says each of its coins contains 0.5 gram of gold.
It is a busy day at the Mokolo market in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, with people buying and selling in preparation for end-of-year feast. 24-year-old Pamela Efosi says she has had lots of problems buying vegetables because sellers complain of the lack of 25, 50 and 100 CFA franc coins.
I've given 500, they're telling me that there's no coin, and everywhere I'm going, they're telling me there's no cash. They're saying there's one game that Chinese people are bringing, when they put coins inside, go inside and remain. So that's why we are suffering today in Cameroon.
She referred to a scheme that involves boxes placed in supermarkets that appear to look like games, where people drop coins in and have a chance to win something. However, authorities say the boxes were placed there for the purpose of taking the coins to China. Last Saturday, police in Cameroon's economic capital, Douala, arrested 3 Chinese and 2 Cameroonians suspected of transporting the coins to China. Inspector of Police David Abakachi says the suspects are helping them in investigations to dismantle a bigger network operating in neighboring Gabon as well.
Sur dénonciation, nous avons mis sur pied une équipe.
He says after a tip-off from civilians, police discovered 42 bags of coins in a house owned by a Chinese couple in Cameroon's economic capital city, Douala. He says they have evidence that the money was to be illegally transported either by sea or by air to Asian countries. Police did not say how much was found with the suspects, but said middlemen working for Chinese agents were paying an additional 3% of the value of each coin they bought. Cameroon, Chad, Central African Republic, Equatorial Guinea, Gabon, and the Republic of Congo use the CFA franc as a single currency in their economic bloc, the Central African Economic and Monetary Community, CEMAC. Last week, the Chadian-born governor of the Bank of Central African States, Abbas Mohamed Tolly, said much of the coins his bank controls in Cameroon were being illegally exported to Asian countries, especially China, where they are used in making jewelry. He did not say how much has illegally been taken out, but the Permanent Secretary for Economic and Financial Reforms Programs of CEMAC, Michelle C. Jena Wembu, says the amount could be estimated at millions of dollars. He says it is imperative for Central African states to work in synergy to combat the theft because it is already taking a toll on the economy of the economic bloc of 6 member states.
Please, let us be frank. We have the same central bank. We have to work together and find common solution. We have no choice. Many people think that you can have a solution in Congo, but you don't care about Cameroon. You can have a solution in Cameroon, but this problem is only a Congolese problem or a Gabonese problem. It is not true. we will work together to find common solution.
Last October, CEMAC heads of state met in an extraordinary session in the Chadian capital, N'Djamena, and said the end of the economic crisis in the region was still uncertain. The session concluded that it was urgent to accelerate the implementation of structural reforms recommended by the IMF to boost growth. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Leading international travel guides are lauding Zimbabwe as one of Africa's go-to places in 2019, raising the possibility of a boon for the battered economy. Reporter Eddie Gondo gives us more on the story.
Despite making headlines for all the wrong reasons, including the violence that followed July's election, Lonely Planet put Zimbabwe at third after Sri Lanka and Germany. The producer of country guides says travelers to Zimbabwe have always raved about a country that is one of Africa's safest destinations and blessed with ultra-friendly locals with a sense of hope despite the country's problems. It also boasts Big Five field national parks, World Heritage-listed archaeological ruins, forested mountains, and Victoria Falls. National Geographic Traveler has Zimbabwe ninth on its list of must-see destinations, the highest for any African country. One of Zimbabwe's leading travel agencies, Africa Albida, concurs. CEO Ross Kennedy speaks on the matter.
The tourism sector in Southern Africa is certainly in a very positive trend right now. And there's no question that the region is travel journalists often describe as hot.
Kennedy sees a wide-ranging surge in tourism arrivals spanning all the major tourist attractions within the country.
As an example of this, let's take Victoria Falls, where in the month of August was the single busiest month since we've been keeping records since 1992. And Victoria Falls has just witnessed its highest occupancies since that time. And it's a remarkable record during this transitional period in our country's history. That arrival flow is impacting across the tourism sector in Zimbabwe.
Kenny says places such as Wange, Matopos, Kariba and the Eastern Highlands are experiencing good seasons with a resurgence in demand for lodges and camps. Still, tourism industry players such as Kennedy are still waiting on the regional governments within SADC to address the problem of port of entries and streamlining of visa processes.
Regional tourism authorities and regional tourism ministers to come together and make sure that the process of getting a visa if you need one, reducing the number of source markets that need a visa, reducing the costs, and then absolutely streamlining and being best in class at the processes used at those borders. Those are the kind of things that need addressing to continue making us attractive to the source markets.
Observers say a regional approach to the travel sector is critical for sustainability, and SADC countries seem to have understood the need for a consolidated approach that will produce dividends. In the last 2 years, Victoria Falls in Zimbabwe, Kasane in Botswana, and Zambia's Livingstone Airport have all upgraded runways and technology for handling passengers.
So the inter-regional opportunities that exist and the access opportunities that exist generally make it more competitive and therefore bring costs down for the traveler to make us a more attractive destination to markets across the world.
Observers say one of the reasons for Zimbabwe's favorable rankings despite the current economic and political turbulence is safety for tourists. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigo.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and thanks for choosing the VOA.
Mudu, host of Health Chat. Join us on Health Chat Tuesday as we discuss alcohol consumption and how to be safe this holiday season. Our guest is Dr. George Koop, director of the U.S. National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.